Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Mark, I've been unable to sleep since reading about Casey Musgrave's appearance on Saturday Night Live last week.
I saw this. And oh, my goodness.
Did you see the clip? You probably
saw it. I did, yeah. It's fantastic.
So Casey Musgrave's plugging her new record, which is, of course, as is traditional, her post-divorce record. Everybody has to have one of these nowadays. And she got a record called Justified, decided that somehow to celebrate her kind of independence somehow, she would appear on Saturday Night Live with the lights down, admittedly,
naked. With a strategically placed acoustic guitar. Naked. But anyway.
Let's be clear about this. Yeah. Naked.
Naked.
But
stark
for
naked,
an acoustic.
Apart from a pair of cowboy boots.
Cowboy boots and an acoustic guitar.
But I don't think it was a confidence thing. I mean, I read a little interview and she was saying she felt really vulnerable and exposed about being single again. I felt in a naked place. So it was a little bit of a, you know, what it basically is a genius bit of publicity passed off very earnestly as an artistic statement.
Of course it is.
Which is great. Of course it is.
That's the way those things work. But I thought beyond that. Once you've gone beyond that, Mark, wouldn't you just imagine? TV studio. It's a live TV studio. There's a load of people in there. There's a studio audience from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
But apart from that, there's fellow performers, there's technicians, there's your retinue or whatever. You are on stage, sitting on a stool, and this is an important point we're going to come back to, Mark.
Yeah.
Naked. Literally naked. Apart from the cowboy boots.
And she was naked because we know, because in a brilliant piece, again, of publicity, she got all the attention for being on the show with nothing on. And then her PR 2 days later posted pictures taken from behind, from the back, to prove, there she is sitting on the stool, that she really was naked. So they get kind of two cracks at this publicity. Don't they?
Cracks,
and had to say
cracks,
that they got
very
her
good.
On. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Mrs. They had to explain that they had to get her on stage wrapped in towels, didn't they? So they got her there with the lights down, wrapped in towels, and then, you know, get her settled on the stool and then very carefully remove the towels and put the guitar on. There's all the stage guys around, as you say, there's all the crew there and everything. Oh,
but, Mark, I've got a question to ask you. What's the stool made of? What's the average stool that you might find at TV studio? It'd be some kind of leatherette.
Leatherette. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And if you sat naked on a thing like that, you know, under hot studio lights, and you were called upon to make it to the fire exit in a hurry, the chances are that you would leave behind a layer of epidermis. The stool, wouldn't you? If you sat on a... Set on any item of furniture in your house naked.
Naked.
It'd feel odd, wouldn't you, really?
I think it would feel very odd indeed.
So anyway, to test the kind of physics of this proposition, we've got something very exciting in store. Mr. Alex Gold, later on in this podcast.
He doesn't know this yet.
He doesn't know
he's
this
listening.
Yet.
Our producer.
Is going to perform part of a song while naked in his cabin aboard of a cruise liner, but for a strategically placed guitar. Okay, so that sound you might hear in the distance is Alex having palpitations or demanding a recount or whatever.
So here we are accusing her of kind of cheap publicity and trying to engineer a little for ourselves. Quite
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, talking to crazy Americans. Steve Van Zandt's here this week plugging his book, and he was talking at the Cheltenham Festival, I think. And so he was in Cheltenham, and he posted a picture of him by the grave of Brian Jones in Cheltenham, and saying that it's insufficiently grand for somebody of Ryan Jones's stature.
Oh, that's what he meant, didn't he? I didn't quite understand that, because his post was just the injustice, this injustice must be rectified. So he meant it was just too small scale.
He said he changed the world, you know, which I'm not really sure that Ryan Jones changed the world. Anyway, and it just struck me, you know, the American attitude to kind of celebrity graves is rather different from ours, isn't it? And it made me think, how many kind of rock star graves could you visit in this country? And I don't think there's an awful lot. Have you ever been to one?
I don't know if I've ever been to any. That's a really good point. What are the significant ones? I mean, you kind of tend to think of the kind of Karl Marxes, don't you? And the Oscar Wilde's in Paris. And what are the main destinations?
George Michael, interestingly, is buried in Highgate Cemetery, but an unmarked grave, which I think is a very good idea, you know, because if you don't want...
It is.
You don't want something surrounded by people leaving inappropriate tributes or whatever and tramp it all over the graveyard looking for him. That's a sensible thing to do. But it's interesting that, even Churchill, the kind of most celebrated Englishman of the 20th century, arguably, he's buried in a country churchyard in Oxfordshire. This tends to happen with so many of these people. And I've just been looking up, you know, this happened with other music names are just in local churchyards. And also I didn't realize that Brian Epstein's grave is there in the Jewish cemetery in Liverpool. I think it's Long Lane Cemetery in Liverpool. I never knew that at all.
But is that nothing grand then, presumably?
Well, nothing particularly grand, no.
Because that's the interesting thing about Oscar Wilde was that, I mean, Oscar Wilde actually died in some kind of almost poverty, really, didn't he?
Oh,
very
absolutely.
Reduced circumstances in Paris. And, you know, life was... And you go there and it's unbelievably impressive, you know.
Is it?
So, yeah. It's a very elaborate thing. So,
right. I didn't realise that Thomas Hardy... He's buried in Westminster Abbey, but his heart is buried in a churchyard in Dorset.
Good Lord.
Is that extraordinary?
That is very odd.
And Dickens...
Cromwell was buried in two different locations. Oh,
they dug him up later, didn't they?
Yeah.
They hanged him, didn't they? Well, it was pretty grisly happened to him. But anyway, I just thought, Brian Jones in a local cemetery doesn't bother me at all. You know what I mean? And I don't think people need these kind of grand memorials at all. I don't think they need presidential libraries and all that carry on. You know, the grandest rock star tombs I've been to have been in the States. It's like Elvis Presley's and so forth. I don't think we're going for that kind of thing over here.
Maybe we don't do it, but whereas. Maybe there's more of an American tradition in doing it. Dylan did it quite a lot, didn't he? There's a famous picture of him and Ginsberg at Kerouac's tomb. Do you remember that? When they're on, I think it might have been the Rolling Thunder tour. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
But I think it's more of a kind of a tourist destination for Americans. That's interesting.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
Well, welcome, Ian Martin. First of all, this is a bit of a new departure, actually. Ian's not only a Patreon supporter, but more importantly, in this case, it's his birthday, isn't it, Ian? Is it today?
It is. Well, it's in a few days' time, yeah.
It's in a few days' time. So you're our special guest on this podcast to mark this birthday. What have you got planned for the birthday? Anything really exciting?
Well, on the date, we're actually going out to see the Boomtown Rats at the London Palladium, which is something that's been cancelled about three times, but I think we're pretty certain it's going to take place this week, this year.
So what kind of lineup do the Boomtown Rats come out with nowadays? Do we know?
Well, it will be Bob Geldof and maybe
a
couple
of... Is it just him and Johnny Fingers or somebody?
Yeah, it is.
Did you see the documentary about them that they repeated just the other night?
I did, yeah. I actually thought it was well done, you know.
Incredibly well done. It's such a good story.
And people are very fond of him, aren't they? I mean, Sting was clearly gushing about Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats.
He was. See, I think people are very fond of him. I don't know how many are as fond of the Rats' music, but they certainly approve of and love Bob. He's got a lot of
And he's a good front. a front man. I mean, I remember a few years ago when they reformed, they just come out and they try and grab the audience in the first minute. And once you're hooked, you're hooked.
Well, we know from our experience a few months ago doing when he was our guest on The Word in Your Attic or whatever, we literally got about one question.
And it was
just sheer energy.
Riveting.
He was fantastic.
I think it's one of the best ones that we've done, actually. He just talked about the experience of watching bands when you're 13 or 14. In incredible detail, didn't he, Dave?
Oh, it's brilliant.
The clothes, you can remember clothes that all five of the Rolling Stones were wearing and their attitudes and the things that he nicked for his own stage act. It's really interesting.
But also, of all the people we've talked to during lockdown of various different stages, he was the one who most had most things to say that he'd clearly been storing up for a long time, you know what I mean? So you just started him. So I'm sure he'll be the same at the Palladium, you know, he'll be just dying to get on stage like loads of these people are.
I don't know Bob Geldof, but I mean, I bumped into him a couple of times. And I think the fact that his career was up and down, actually, I think he really appreciates the highs.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I bumped into him a soft play area in Clapham when he was with the kids,
That's a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, they were young. But of course, you probably couldn't give a Boomtown Rats ticket away at that stage.
No. So you bought the ticket for the Palladium and this has been postponed. So you've just had this ticket sitting there for what? 18 months or something.
That's right. Which is a short time. I mean, I've got an Elton John ticket I've had for 4.5 years.
Oh, really?
Where's that? Oh, you posted about that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Saying that you estimated he had something like £473 million of punter's money in a bank and it had been there for 4 years.
Well, I mean, I bought the ticket on the 18th of November when I was working in music. We used to do Elton John's tour. So I thought it's the last day of this farewell tour, I'll buy a ticket. So I bought it on the 18th of November 2018. It's been cancelled numerous times. It's now meant to take place in April 2023.
That's a long way away.
Is sitting there earning some kind of percentage, I presume.
Sorry, David.
Have we followed the story of Marillion's tour? Have you seen this? Where they're... Well, Marillion were pioneers of kind of crowdfunding the making of albums and so forth. They've got a very well established fan base, not huge, but it's there.
Yeah,
and they can't get insurance to tour, because the danger of something happening to them, such as has happened recently to Genesis, that somebody in the band or the touring party is positive for COVID, and therefore the whole thing's been called off for a few days or whatever. And Marillion can't get insurance to cover this. So the only way they can insure themselves is asking the fans to donate as much as they can afford. And this will be put in a kind of sealed account. And assuming the tour all goes ahead, you'll get your money back. But if the tour doesn't, or any dates have to be
cancelled,
your money will be used to pay the crew and the costs and the trucking and so forth. I thought it was a great test of your bond with your
fans.
That is, you know, asking somebody, you know, to say, all right, have you got $5,000 you can give us or something like that?
That is the extra mile, isn't it? My God.
I thought it was extraordinary that it had come to that, you know, but I suppose people just can't make plans with confidence, can they, really?
No.
And that's going to go on for a while, isn't it? Go on, carry on.
I think Blondie have just cancelled their tour. They've moved it into 2022. You know, I mean, I think it's moving between borders is very difficult.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got members of the band or the crew that aren't vaccinated. It probably makes it quite difficult. I mean, we went to see Rick Astley and the Blossoms last night.
Yes, tell us about that.
Well, I mean, again, it's the modern world. I mean, I got to the venue and I said to Jill, my wife, I said, oh, my God, I haven't got my phone. And you've got to show your COVID certification. So I said, you go in.
Where is this taking place? Where was it?
It's at the Kentish Town Forum.
Okay,
so it's about 2,000 people there, I guess. So she went in. It was unreserved seating, so where we were. And got a seat, and I went back, got my phone, showed my COVID certification, got in. And I have to say, I mean, I would, it's quite bizarre. So it's Rick Astley and the Blossoms, who are a young five-piece band, I guess from Salford, I believe. And they were doing songs of the Smiths. And I would say 65% of the audience there were Blossoms fans. So they were quite young. And sort of 35% were sort of various selections of people that recollect the Smiths.
Oh, really?
That's interesting. So if you're a Blossoms fan, how would you have felt about the fact they're playing Smiths? So, I mean, surely you would have been slightly aggrieved, wouldn't you? Because it was entirely Smiths, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was entirely Smiths. So, I suppose if you're a Blossoms fan, you just turn up, don't you? I mean, you were talking about Marillion. These are probably hardcore fans. Blossoms at the moment are probably out of the Smiths, Rick Astley, and the Blossoms are the bigger band. You know, they've had two number one albums. They fill out big venues. It was a chance to see the Blossoms at a small venue doing something different.
And so, so if you're a Blossoms fan, you turn up, and the Blossoms are what, in their 20s or early 30s? Okay. Yeah. And out front is this chap who, Rick Astley, how old is Rick Astley, for goodness sake? It's got to be in his 50s. 50?
Yeah, it's got to be 50s, yeah. He's a little bit younger than me.
So who's this old duffer who comes out in front of them and sings songs by another group?
That's right.
That's absolutely without precedent, isn't it? I can't think of anything like it.
Well, I know there's been some strange sort of tie-ups, haven't there? A few years ago, we went to see Shaggy and Sting, and who would have thought that was possible?
Oh, did they do a whole show, Shaggy and Sting?
Yeah, so they alternated between a Shaggy song, a Sting song, and one that they'd done together. It was Franz Ferdinand and Sparks. I mean, it's all... I think the nuance...
They're more of a marriage, though, aren't they? They're from the same world. Well, Ginger Baker and Public Image Limited. So there have been some classics in the past.
Well, Taylor Swift and Death Leppard was another one that was the more of the bizarre. But, I mean, I have to say that... I mean, I don't really know the works of the Blossoms, but they can really play. I mean, they are royal, well-drilled, and Rick Astley came on they did Smith songs, and they started with one or two of the hits, but they did some for the connoisseurs of the Smiths. But what's interesting is the crowd seemed to know every line to every song, you know, and I mean, also it was quite joyous that because it was a young crowd, my wife had got in before I did, and as I was walking up the stairs, all I could hear was everybody singing along to Sweet Caroline. And so this whole thing got,
match.
Yeah, it got built up. It was a night out. And
I've seen a few clips of it. I thought he did it really well.
I thought it was just incredibly,
because what they did was do it really faithfully. That clip of this charming man, note for note, like the record, as much as they possibly could, all the inflections. I thought that was really credible. It's not like he's trying to do an interpretation of it or a better version of it or a cover version. It's just literally, you know,
It was note for note. I mean, the technology is better. These guys can really play. Being a five piece rather than a three, you know, a four piece, it helped in terms of the depth of the sound. It was very, very, very good. And, you know, they ended with this charming man and there's a light that never goes out and everybody, it was party. But you say they didn't try. There was a few swinging of the microphone, a few sort of daffodils went into the audience, you know, but it was a tribute, you know. They were clearly all Smiths fans, and they were trying to do the best that they could, and it was terrific. And he can really sing, Rick Astley. I mean, whatever one thinks of him as just a pop star, but he can really sing.
He definitely can. Definitely.
And you know, I don't think if the Smiths were gonna, you know, if Morrissey had left the Smiths and they'd looked for another singer, you know, Rick Astley would have been on many people's list. But he could have done the job.
He could have done the job.
It does work.
We finally reached the point where the cover versions are better than the originals, aren't they? This is what's happened in popular music. It's just about time.
Well, it's true, because what else is available? There's very little Morrissey available. Johnny Marr does occasionally do some, doesn't he? But sings them himself and doesn't. Honestly, it sounds sacrilegious to say it, but I don't think they sound as good as what you saw last night. It's just a much better version.
And the key clue to the fact that Morrissey was not in the house was Ian said it was a party. That wouldn't be happening if Morrissey was there at all. So, okay, so you're a bit of a connoisseur of these kind of strange pairings and, you know, any more you got lined up that you're going to go and see? You got your Elton ticket. What else have you got lined up?
I've got lots of obviously, there's been a whole number of shows that have been moved. But, I try and go out and see live music at least once or twice. I mean, this week we went to see Patti Smith at the Royal Albert Hall. That was absolutely
Which got
terrific.
Rave notices, didn't it?
And talking of cover versions, I think her cover version of Gloria, the Van Morrison song, is just terrific. And I think she's faithful, but she puts a real spin on it. And She didn't on the night that we went. That she didn't do Frederick or Because the Night. So sort of, but it was still as the Guardian, gave it 5 stars. But it was a really really good night out. And then we went to see Nick Cave as well at the Albert Hall this week.
Good grief. You do get around.
That's very impressive.
Well, it's like buses, isn't it? We haven't had any for 2 years.
No, okay.
Coming on, you might as well go and catch up.
Yes. Well, Ian, have a very good day on your birthday.
Thank you.
Coming up. And you got any presents? You got your thoughts on?
Well, I've got a few books. So a few books and T-shirts, I think, were on the list. So let's hope. And
what's the present you're buying for yourself? when we get to our age, that becomes the big issue.
How you guys been?
All right.
We're just babbling away as fools. Yes, at the usual spot. We're fine. We're fine.
My day today is a bit like an episode of The Likely Lads. I'm a big boxing fan, so I'm trying to avoid the boxing result.
Oh, really? Good grief. Even I know that, and I know nothing.
Yeah,
about.
Well,
I'm not going to tell you. Don't worry.
I've got 2 hours to go before I can watch it on rerun. And so I've been out for a run. I've avoided all sorts
That's
of social
amazing.
Media. I mean,
you're going to spend the next 2 hours sitting underneath a cushion somewhere.
You can't even do what the Likely Lads did, which was go in a church. Do you remember? Because it's Sunday, and if you went to church, there'd be people in there.
I went for a run along the river. Luckily, there was nobody around.
That's amazing. I didn't think you can. Well, we want to know later on. Drop us a line to let us know whether you avoided finding out the result. That's amazing. Ian, cheers. Thank you very much for
thank
being
here. Thank you very much.
Being
have a good birthday. Yourselves, guys.
Okay, cheers. Happy birthday.
Bye. Bye.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So John Mayle has finally hung up his cowboy hat. Is that right, Mark?
Well, he's announced that he's stopping touring. Do you know, it's funny. I mean, as a kid, you're always aware of the fact that he was quite old, weren't you? I mean, you know, John Mayle was 30, I think, when Eric Clapton joined the Blues Breakers at the age of 19. So you always kind of thought of him as kind of an old geezer. I didn't realise how old he was. He's 88.
Right.
So he's born in 1933. Amazing. He had a band called the Powerhouse Four in 1956. I mean, that's before the Beatles even met. That's pretty senior, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And he's one of the few guys who did National Service, which I'm always really interested in, because there's something rather fascinating about the idea that, you know, that there was a member of the Rolling Stones who was, for nearly 2 years, part of the Air Force.
He was Air Craftsman Bill Perks from Penge. Cannot imagine anything more... you know, that reeks more of the old pre-rock and roll England than the idea of Air Craftsman Bill Perks of Penge.
Of Penge.
It's like something out of the Army Game or, you know, Get Some In or some sitcom set in the forces. Yeah. And then he, you know, so there must be people, possibly people still alive, who remember being in the Air Force with Bill Perks and saying, and you know, I was in the Air Force with this geezer. And then a few years later,
the next time I saw him,
he was doing honky tonk women on Top of the Pop. I mean, you know, It's quite a transformation, isn't it?
It's
anyway,
I only discovered a few other. But it's funny, they got away with National Service. It was done away with in 1959, I think. So you had to be 18 to do it. So that means, you know, Ian Hunter and Jet Black and Ginger Baker, all that lot, didn't have to do it. None of the Beatles were there. I could only find five people who had, and they were Lonnie Donegan, right, as you'd imagine.
Yeah, he was
born in 1931. Yeah. Yeah, he was National Service in the Army in Southampton. Engelbert Humperdinck.
Wow,
was in the Royal Army Corps, the Royal Corps of Signals. Bill Wyman, John Mayall, obviously. And the other one, and not that he's a musician, of course, is John Peel. John Peel was in the Royal Artillery as a B-2 radar operator. And I can remember interviewing him once and him telling me that he really enjoyed it. He was the very last wave of people in National Service. And he loved it. He just sat around and was playing records all the time.
Well, it was a life-changing thing, wasn't it, for loads of people? They always say, you know, that generation, our parents' generation, it was always the transformational experience of life, whether it involved war and violence or not.
Yeah.
It was just being in the forces. You suddenly met a load of people.
You met a load of people you were taken away from home.
From parts of the country and from backgrounds that you would never have come across otherwise. And, you know, that just all...
Well, my parents probably would never have met them before the war. You know, one from the south of England, one from the north of England.
Oh, really?
And the whole of England was shuffled and redelt, wasn't it, at that point?
And yes.
In different places, you know.
Very well Amazing. Put. Shuffled and redelt. Can I just... throw in my favorite bit of reading matter the last week is I found a filmography of the film roles of the late great Irene Handel.
Oh, I saw that. Yes,
I do recommend to anybody find it on Wikipedia. It's unbelievable. There's just millions of films, and out of which Irene Handel always played kind of rather strange older ladies who are very often landladies or whatever.
And they have fantastic names, don't they?
And I'm just going to give you
a few. I'm looking at it now. Go on, yeah.
In Rhythm Serenade in 1943, she played Mrs. Crumbly.
Mrs. Crumbling. That's right.
In Give Us the Moon in 1944, she was Miss Haddock.
Miss Haddock.
Very good. In Small Hotel in 1957, she was Mrs. Gammon. And in The Pure Hell of St. Trinians in 1960, she was Miss Harker Parker. And
a kind of toffee-nosed Harridan. You can just imagine it, can't you?
And in The Wrong Box in 1966, she was Mrs. Hackett. In Smashing Time in 1967, she was Mrs. Gimble. And then when you get to the later part of her career, in Confessions of a Driving Instructor in 1976, she was Miss Slender Parts.
Miss Slender Parts. That's right.
The following year in Adventures of a Private Eye, she was Miss Friggin. At the last remake of Beaugest in 1977, which is almost her last part, she was Miss Wormwood. So God bless.
That is genius.
God bless the memory of Irene Handel. I love Irene Handel. Anyway, have you seen the pictures of Cliff Richard on tour?
Cliff's trousers? I have. Well, he's back on stage, isn't he? Aged 80 or whatever. People are going to be very surprised about the fact he's still going. But, you know, why not, for God's sake?
Oh, absolutely.
He was described in the news story as the triple vaccinated singer, delighted a crowd of adoring fans with a two-hour set. His first four is a two-hour set. Oh, the idea is now the triple vaccinated singer.
I do.
Yeah, he's wearing an unbelievable pair of trousers that I think even a 15-year-old would feel were pretty adventurous and racy.
They're
made of rubber to me. But
they're the kind of trousers that was it Tom Hibbert or Sylvia Patterson back in the days of Smash Hits, probably Sylvia, would have described as perv breeks.
Perv breeks.
They are absolutely the image of perv breeks. So I do recommend having a look at those. Sadly,
let's not forget though that Tony Bennett was still touring when he was 95. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Well,
he only recently stopped. He did a gig with Lady Gaga, I think, this year. Actually, that's pretty amazing.
Well, BB King retired.
BB King was how old was he? 89.
He retired in his 70s and came back.
Came back
because they can't be at home. Just can't be at home. They're no use at all unless they've got something to aim at. And it's probably
Many live musicians say that you know, at 8 o'clock in the evening you get that kind of sudden burst of adrenaline.
Yeah.
You're kind of programmed to go on stage. You feel you should be doing it. You know, So, yeah, he kept going and I think just had to give up a couple of tour dates because he wasn't feeling very well and then popped his clogs. God bless him. What a way to go. Fantastic.
So talking of veteran musicians, we'll be back in a moment with our favourite veteran musician, Alex Gold.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
Okay, we're back. And
it's our very own Casey Musgraves.
As promised, but honestly, those who are not Patreon supporters will simply be listening to this. They won't be seeing what we're seeing, which is that Alex Gold has volunteered, or actually I volunteered him, to test out the kind of physics of doing what Casey Musgraves did on Saturday Night Live, which is performing a song naked but for a guitar. In her case, it was a large acoustic guitar. In Alex Gold's case, what is it, Alex? What have you got there?
It's a large electric guitar.
It's a large electric guitar. But you are naked, apart from a few beads.
A few beads and a John Lennon wig.
A John Lennon wig. We should understand. We should explain. It's part of your day job because you're on a Mediterranean cruise ship where you appear as one of the Beatles every night.
However, with clothes.
But with clothes. Now you have spent hours, many hours performing on stage with clothes, with musical instruments. Is this your first time naked, Alex? Doing this?
I might have offered the odd and unlucky lady occasional naked serenade.
Oh right!
Oh yeah!
But certainly
before
not
breakfast,
over the
would
internet.
You like to hear a self-penned classic? I'll get me coat. Yeah.
So play us a little bit of something, Alex, and I want to know how it feels. Go on.
Okay, here we go. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it. Go on.
Okay, nice. Let's hope I can sing it this time in the morning. Okay. There are places I remember all my life. Though some have changed, some forever, not far better. Some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I love you more.
So, how's it feeling, Alex? How's it feeling so far?
Is it different?
It feels somehow lighter. Yeah, more breezy. I think I'll do this tonight. I'll be flying home tomorrow.
Seriously, it must be odd, Alex. It's got to be odd, doesn't it?
Not entirely, because when you're used to wearing wigs and fake moustaches and all manner of weird clothes...
Oh, right, okay.
You know, there's only so many kinds of weird that can be new to you, you know, so this is just another kind of weird, really, to slot in with all the other kinds of weird that are a part of my daily life.
Well, you've done us a great service in allowing us to conduct that live experiment there. Alex.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you chose me to.
We should have got you to play. There's a great track by ZZ Top called "Buck Naked." So that's what you should have done.
All right.
Very impressive.
In the nip. So we move on to readers' questions, Mark. We've got solicited people's inquiries from the Massive.
And we're leaving Alex on screen.
We are. We're just going to leave it there.
Control the vibes.
Yeah.
When you need some inspiration, just look at me, you know. And
okay, we will. That's great. Okay.
There you go. Martin Valens is quite interesting. He says he's seen the Sparks Brothers documentary and he's complained about it's too happy.
I saw that post.
There are no drugs, no personnel issues, no deaths. So can it qualify as a rock documentary? I think it's a very fair point.
It's a very fair point. It was made by Edgar Wright, who is a kind of an absolute super fan.
Yeah.
So he was looking for the most kind of joyous aspects of the story, wasn't he? Because he's incredibly enthusiastic about it. But you're absolutely right. Nothing goes wrong. They had their ups and downs commercially,
yeah,
but they don't have their ups and downs personally, which they is don't fall out. It's bad. And they're brothers. So there's none of that kind of Simon and Garfunkel kind of, you know, Everly Brothers, they won't be on the same stage together stuff. You know, they don't fall out. So it's true. It doesn't have any of the usual dynamic.
It doesn't have the usual arc, I think you'd say.
That's right. That's Martin. Right.
So that's a fair point. GD Silver Surfer says, what short songs would you put on a playlist that was going to be less than 30 minutes in total? So loads and loads of short songs. He nominates I Feel Fine by the Beatles. Is that particularly short? I suppose it is. Del Shannon's Runaway, Pictures of Lily by The Who. There's a Small Faces. I think it was an A-side. Is it called Just Passing? Do you know that, Alex? You've done the Small Faces many times. And I think it's about 1 minute 30 or something like that.
Oh, really?
It's really, really short. And it's kind of the short and the brevity of it is part of its charm. You listen very closely because you know it's going to go away really, really quickly.
You want I Will by the Beatles. I Will by the Beatles is something ridiculous. Is it 1 minute 45 or something? It's just perfect. And also Song 2 by Blur, which
song
I adore.
Two by Blur, yeah.
How long is that? That's about 2 minutes, isn't it, Magic?
Two minutes, yep. But all those early Beatles songs, they're all about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
No, I suppose what he's talking about is stuff that's distinctly below 2 minutes, shorter than 2 minutes. Interesting point. We'll throw that home to the massive people who no doubt got suggestions. Paul Murray wants to know, what's the most essential record label? And I'm very glad you came to me with this question, Paul, because
you know the answer, Dave.
I know the answer. It's Atlantic Records. Okay, it's just as simple.
All right, that's cleared up.
That's what.
No room for argument.
No room at all. David Hill says, when 70s bands cut their hair, ELP, yes, etc., did their creativity diminish? I think that's a fair point.
That's a brilliant point. So is it a Samson-like kind of strength loss here, is it? Yes.
Well, didn't ELP make a record? I think I'm right.
They did.
They make a record called Love Island or something like that. It was named after an island of some kind. And they all have the haircut. And they just look weird with short hair.
Well, ELP, they just didn't look like ELP.
It just didn't work at all. I was thinking, who was I thinking about the other day that somebody was still touring? And it's the same old thing we always think, you know, when people are still touring, it's because they've kept their hair.
Bruce Dickinson carried it off. Bruce Dickinson had about 3 yards of unconditioned hair lopped off at one point and still came across as Bruce Dickinson. So, you know, there are exceptions.
But the rest of the band kept their long hair, though, didn't they?
So that's true, they did.
They were propping his lack of hair up.
Yeah.
Hair to spare.
Yeah.
Brian Cannon Hunter wants to know, Mark, if you and I were offered any other TV work afterwards.
God, what do we do now? Just lie and say, oh, my God, I was inundated with stuff. God, I don't think...
No, we did that. We'd be in VH1 years later.
Oh, we did VH1. That's true. We did VH1.
I did
odds and ends. Just really the odd thing. I did a thing for the British Museum once, but I mean, no, we were never off any programmes, were we?
I don't think so.
Certainly not.
I don't think so. Keith Ansley, of course, who we know, there is a large increase in the number of people wearing flares. Do you think we will see the return of the loon pant and the greatcoat? Now, that's interesting because...
Well, come back in 89, didn't it? Big time.
But did the loon pant come back? Because the loon pant, as we frequently recalled, was an item of trousering which made no allowance for the gender of the wearer. And so if you see pictures, and you can still see pictures of Robert Plant.
Usually Robert Plant wearing
Or Paul Rogers or whatever, wearing the loom pant without, shall we say, any support.
That's right.
And so you can see the religions of the wearers can easily be detected. They were also, the thing about loom pants, they were really cheap, weren't they?
I seem to remember they were about £3, and they were made of about 4 pieces of material loosely tacked together. Made of stiff kind of canvas. There's a company called South Sea Bubble.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
South Sea Bubble. And when they were of £33 when a pair of jeans were probably 8 or 9 or something like that. So that's a cheaper alternative. And so a bit rather similar applies to the greatcoat, because the thing about the greatcoat was it was unbelievably cheap, wasn't it?
You got them from the Army and Navy surplus, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. They'd be last worn on Arctic convoys or whatever. Yeah. And you used to be able to buy those for a couple of quid.
They would reappear at Wheelie Festival. I know, yeah. It just seems bizarre.
And, Ichabod Wolf says, "Acts for whom the first track of their debut album is the best song in their catalogue."
I saw that and I could not believe there can be any examples, because how can the best thing you ever did be the first thing you ever did and you could not improve at all? I mean, go on. What would that make? The Beatles would be, I saw a standing there.
Well, that's pretty good.
It's a pretty good start. Not the best thing in the
category. GD Silver Surfer says, apparently, and you're the Oasis expert, Alex, Supersonic, is that the first track on the first Oasis album?
No, it was the first single, but it's track number 7.
good. Good knowledge.
Okay, well,
the first track's Rock and Roll Star, which some would actually argue encapsulates Oasis are meant to be, but not my personal favourite for sure.
John Med says, "I hate to upset Mark, but Queen are already..." This is a bit of an emotive phrase coming up, Mark. "Wiping the floor with the Beatles." He sent in some Spotify screen grabs on back-to-back days. And Bohemian Rhapsody has a total number of streams of 1.6 billion and is being streamed how many times a day, Alex? How many times a day?
Oh, I want to know. This is...
How many times a day?
It's got to be in the tens of millions, surely.
It can't be.
2 million times a day.
Oh, my
a
Lord.
A day. It goes to...
For which the songwriters would get, what, about sort of, you know, 76
pence. That's right.
No, but if you add it up, they get a fortune. Well, that's the whole thing about that stuff. Is
100,000 Spotify gets you about 3,000 quid, I think.
Okay. Oh, right. Well, that's amazing.
Okay. The point is, it goes on, doesn't it? It doesn't, it doesn't just happen for 2 years.
Yeah.
It happens for 30 years or whatever. Keeps on going. And, I think if you're a top earner on Spotify, I think you're doing very well indeed. It's the middling earners and the lower earners who are not.
So that's actually astonishing. So it's generating, tens of thousands a day, isn't it? I mean,
you would have thought so.
Yeah,
one way or another.
Yeah.
So, what's your favorite music documentary, everybody?
Oh, God.
Duncan wants to know this.
Dig was good. Do you remember Dig with Dandy Warhols and Brian Jonestown Massacre? That was fantastic. Don't Look Back is fantastic. Obviously, the Dylan one. Oil City Confidential is really good.
Oil City Confidential is very good. And I also like that one that was made for ITV about Status Quo on tour.
Oh, that was brilliant.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
And I can't
remember. George Harrison Scorsese is terrific.
Oh, we'll have to throw 3 into the ring. The George Harrison was what I was going to mention.
Yeah.
Material World, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Just because of how he flowered after the Beatles broke up. I mean, that contains the magic in it for me. The Joe Strummer one, The Future is Unwritten, Julian Temple. I really love that one. And predictably, Supersonic. Oasis.
Martin Brown wants to know, has any rock star made a decent fist of a film leading role, bar Bowie, perhaps? And
Well, that was Labyrinth, wasn't it?
No, yeah, he was talking about Merry Goblin. Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, I think.
Waits is good in that Coen Brothers thing, but then again, I don't think he has to say anything. He's appeared in a few things, Tom Waits. He's not bad, but he's just Tom Waits, isn't he? I suppose Kris Kristofferson, but would you call him a film star? I don't know. Chris, he's a musician.
Actually, Chris Kristofferson
was pretty good. In A Star Is Born, he's pretty good.
Shall I tell you who the two are? Because I've got the answer to this again, Mark.
Go on.
People waste their time guessing. There are only two pop stars who were also genuinely film stars.
You're going to say David Essex?
No, I'm not. No, not really.
Barbara Streisand?
No. Frank Sinatra.
Oh, okay.
Elvis Presley.
Okay.
But Elvis is acting?
Doesn't matter about acting. Film star, nothing to do with acting.
Just presence, charisma.
Presence. It's, yeah. It's can you appear in front of a camera? And can you be so confident in the way you look that you're quite happy to stand still in front of the camera?
Yeah.
And self-conscious. 99.9% of rock stars, as soon as you put them in front of a film camera, they look self-conscious. Immediately.
Sting, you can see it. Bowie. Bowie's the worst offender, actually.
Absolutely
oh, my
terrible.
Lord, he looks, he's eaten up with anxiety.
It's like you can see them. They're thinking, I've gone too far here. I'm really exposed now. This is not my game. I'm not in charge. Go on.
Ah, but have you seen Bowie as the Goblin King in Labyrinth?
I can't say I have.
Honestly.
And I'm finding it hard to believe that that's a classic. I would
highly recommend you dig in because the hierarchy will change. Mark my words. Bowie is the Goblin King in Labyrinth. Puts him at the top of the podium in my peepers anyway. He makes a great Goblin. Really confident Goblin.
Okay, well, that's something I will do on one of those long winter readings which are coming up.
Although, after your Marvel marathon.
Yeah, after my Marvel marathon. Okay, is that it? Have we got any more for any more?
I'm going to put some clothes on.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.